Life without hope. Now that's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. It means hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. We are live at our last show of 2018. This is Paranoia Con here in Pennsylvania. The guys at Paranoia Con are Paranoia Comics put the show on. Huge shout out to those guys. I'll come on in just a little bit. But I'm exploring right now, so let's see what kind of trouble I can get into. Stop here, Paranoia Con. I am here now with
Austin Miarelli
and
Ethan Hall. Hi.
I'm so sorry. It's like the first convention we've done video at. We just started doing video casts on YouTube, so trying to offer that as a little bit of an extra treat for our viewers. But if you guys are watching this, the quality's terrible. I apologize. But I'm gonna start with you, man. Tell us a little bit about your book.
Well, we have three books here. We have, first off, The Adventures of Waffleman and Pancake Pete. And in the issue we have here, it's called The Big Cheese. It's the story of Waffleman and his sidekick, Pancake Pete, and they try to stop Johnny Cheese and his Flatbread gang from robbing Kitchen City Bank. Second story we have here is Astromax, Adventure of the Seven Systems. And it's the story of Astromax and his robot sidekick, Bud, and they try to stop the evil Emperor Penguin from taking over the Seven Systems. And Waffleman's kind of a throwback to old-school comics, old-school superheroes from the 50s and 60s, and Astromax is a real throwback to classic video games from the 80s. And finally, in the middle, is Rebel Dawn. It's more serious a story, totally different art style, different artist, and it's the longest book we have here. It's the story of a country where the economy is totally free, and one company has bought up everything, and it's the story of the rebellion against that company. But the dilemma is that if it was freedom that caused this problem, how much freedom should a society have so it doesn't happen? How much freedom should a society be trusted?
All right, tell us a little bit about your book, man.
What was the question? Sorry.
Tell us a little bit about your book.
Oh, okay. I mean, pretty much what he said. I am actually only the artist for Waffleman and Astromax. We have a third artist, or a third person, Haley, who couldn't make it today. She did Rebel Dawn. But essentially, from the art side of things, I kind of tried to keep it simple. My inspiration came from, I'd say, newspaper comics. The two of us kind of, bonded in high school that way. We would both kind of draw our own stuff, and we would always read the newspaper comics, our favorite ones. And so I kind of tried to capture that, simple but effective style. So everything looks fun, everything looks fresh, it's colorful. And you can always tell what's going on. It's not too crazy.
So, with the book about waffles, why waffles?
Well, actually, the reason the whole character started was I was sitting in lunch in high school, and I hadn't really come up with an idea in a while, and I asked just kind of a general question, what should I draw? And a friend of mine said, draw a waffle. And by the end of the period, it was Waffle Man. And then by the next period, it was Waffle Man and Pancake Pete. And then by the end of it, it was The Adventures of Waffle Man and Pancake Pete. And I had a whole list of villains and stories, and it's just been building from there.
So tell us a little bit about kind of where Rebel Dawn comes from.
Rebel Dawn, I actually don't entirely remember how I came up with it. It's just something I started drawing characters, and then the story just kind of manifested itself. That's kind of... that's kind of how it goes with every story I've written. I don't start with a story so much. I'll draw a character and then just kind of build out from there, I guess.
No, it's cool. And, I think, looking at these things, I'm not sure if I can actually turn this around. I cannot. All right. You can see, there's, different kind of color palettes. Do you guys also, with the color palettes and kind of with these stories, are you trying to appeal to different age groups?
Yeah, definitely. With the two on the side, it's more of an all ages for the young kids, and for a in the middle is Rebel Dawn, and that's kind of the, you know, teen young adult age bracket, and was sort of the style and the inspiration for Astromax and Waffleman, kind of hoping the nostalgia of the old, of the classic style can kind of get, you know, already the parents' age, adult age.
Yeah, because I think, too, like, from an artist standpoint, like, being on Waffleman, like, what's it kind of like to have a, take a step back into, like, modern day and, like, kind of, like, go back to, like, some of, like, the earlier comics?
Like, comparing from today to old comics, I mean, the thing that really stands out is how much comics have evolved artistically. And in a lot of instances, that's great. There are so many artists out there who, I mean, they're almost like computers. I mean, they can practically, like, render a scene with astonishing accuracy and, you know, great inking work. But the thing you notice when you go back in time is comics looked a lot more like this. I guess part of it was because resolutions were lower. I mean, technological limitations, things like that. Also just a stylistic change. But it's kind of inspiring how much comic artists from, you know, the Golden Age, the Silver Age, all those eras, were able to do so much with so little. I think that's definitely something I try to draw from.
Does it challenge you as an artist to kind of... Oh, raffle announcements.
What is it, the reboot? Necroman, signed by the entire creative team, along with the original raffle lineup.
Enter the raffle, guys.
Yeah, apparently. I mean, all this will be edited out, so... All right. You know, as an artist, kind of, you know, visually speaking, like, does it challenge you to kind of go back, you know, given what we have now, technology-wise and, like, artistically-wise, like you said, like, art has definitely grown in the last 70 years. So is it a challenge for you to kind of, like, step back and, like, change your perspective as far as, like, art goes?
You know... To me, I feel like this style has kind of come naturally because it's just a lot simpler. So, I mean, the kind of drawings I would be doing in middle school were a lot closer to something like this. I think really the challenge comes from acceptance, because people have come to expect more modern style art in comics. So when they come to conventions, a lot of people who are looking for something new aren't necessarily looking for something like this. And I'd say the biggest challenge there is just getting someone to try to maybe take those glasses off, modern glasses off, and, you know, give it a shot.
Nostalgia view, man. Nostalgia view. So, as the writer of this project right here, I mean, you have three separate titles, three separate age groups. Could we ever see a Crisis on Infinite Earths level crossover with these characters?
Maybe not. Honestly, I'm not entirely sure. I've always wanted to maybe do a crossover between Astromax and Waffleman, but mixing in Rebel Dawn is a little bit different. I think definitely a lot more difficult to do, and I really wonder how that would look, because I'd maybe have to have two different artists working on the same book at once and have their both styles kind of the same panels. It would definitely look interesting.
It would. So as a writer, too, and as a creator, like, when you're thinking of these, because, like, looking at Rebel Dawn, it has kind of, like, this old-school, like, Street Fighter feel to it, like, the color palette-wise, logo-wise, and, you know, like you said, like, the Astromax and Waffleman, like, they definitely have, like, this more color pop. What's it like for you as a creator as you're kind of writing these to visually take on these as you're writing them? Like, are you, is that stuff that you're thinking about?
Honestly, no. I mean, I have a weird writing process, you can kind of say. Like, I really just start with a character and just kind of see where it goes. And I don't really think about it a lot until the story's done and I go back and edit it maybe. But for the most part, I'm just kind of going to see where it ends up.
I think you might be the first creator I've ever met that kind of has that process.
Glad to be unique.
Yeah. All right, so speaking of unique, we like to take pop culture and suicide prevention. And we like to, whenever we do these conventions, we always like to start the conversation about mental health. And this seems to be this, like, ginormous stigma around it. In your personal opinion, why do you think it exists, and what can we do to kind of improve upon it?
I mean, starting with this, as someone who struggles with depression every day, and as someone who really kind of my lower points in recent memory, and someone who's used art and comics to get through it, I think one of the best things that anyone can do is be open to people. Not necessarily badgering people to talk about it, but just let the people in your life know you're there. And it starts on a person-to-person level, and it starts with breaking the stigma before anything massive really begun. And people really need to find a way to let people know you're open. And if you know someone's suffering, let them know you're there for them. Can't force it. At the end of the day, whoever's suffering has to be up to them.
Well said. I'm going to ask you the same question. It seems like every time I come over to question you, it's like the guys at the announcements just don't want it to be heard, man. So we are a podcast that deals with suicide prevention, like I previously said, but why do you think, what are practical steps that you would tell listeners to do when breaking the stigma around these issues?
When addressing the stigma? I'm going to parrot kind of what he said for the first point, which is to be open. I really think that is the most important thing. Especially in your interpersonal relationships day to day, when you talk to your friends, when you talk to your family, people close to you. I would venture a guess that more of the people you talk to are going to relate to you than don't. I think more people go through these kinds of feelings and depression and other kind of mental illness and suicidal tendency issues. And, you know, I think generally you're going to find a lot more people that can relate to your feelings and where you feel in life, you know, than don't. And the main thing I'd say to anybody who's really suffering and, you know, just kind of wants to escape everything is to sit back, you know, hang tight, give yourself a day, give yourself time to think, go somewhere quiet, somewhere relaxed, and just think, really think about life. Because I guarantee yourself, if you give yourself time, you're going to realize that at the end of that time that you're glad you're still here. I offer my support to anybody who's going through these issues. I totally understand.
Well said. So this is what I'm going to actually... I'm going to try to squeeze. Can we all three get in? Oh, where can people find you guys online and find out more about the books?
OMEO Comics on Facebook. Facebook.com/HMEOComics. And you can find everything.
Everything's on there. Links to any of our online channels are on there. Everything we do is amazing.
All right. Well, I thank you, gentlemen, so much. Please go check out these guys. They have wonderful comics, wonderful products, and they took time out of their day to spend time with you. Go support these guys.
I'm going to call you out publicly. A, I love you. B, you're not the only one that writes about wolves and packs. I'm here right now with ML Master.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
So tell us a little bit about this book. We just published it. Yes,
it is the first in a series. My main protagonist, Eveline, her brother disappeared. So she kind of launches this little mini investigation to figure out what happened, because the police really aren't doing too much. She kind of ties in the corruption element. But as she starts going through this investigation, things start snowballing and she's ruffling feathers, getting a little too close to something she shouldn't, and realizes that he disappeared because of something tied into the bloodline. So it's a little bit of a mix of a lot of suspense. Everybody that's read it loves the suspense. Yeah, keep them on their toes. Mystery, a little bit of romance, just a paranormal element, adventure, so a little bit of everything.
So we talked a little bit off air. You were telling me a little bit about driving your publisher crazy, because there's a lot of, like, genre marriages that go on throughout the course of this book. So what is it like for you as a writer to challenge yourself and marry multiple genres together?
You know, when I write something, and I write a wealth of stories, I don't write it with genre in mind. I just write what I want to write about, what interests me. and then I let them sort it out. My publisher's like, well, we have to, you know, it's this, it's that. I'm like, I don't know, you tell me. You know, it's a good story, a little bit of everything. So I kind of blend them together. So it's frustrating on their part, but I think from a reader's standpoint, you get a little bit of everything out of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think one thing, too, that keep in mind when you're talking about genres, even the easier you can stand out, the more it is. I love those sort of kinds of things where on the surface it looks like a comedy, and then you have the elements of like drama and action and fantasy all kind of melds into one. So this is a massive story that you're talking about. Tell us a little bit about kind of where this goes as far as like a series.
Well, there's several subplots. I have a degree in history, so all of my stories, this one included, have historic element. And then what I do is I take the actual historic fact and I put a supernatural element in it, which is basically what the backstory on this one is. We're dealing with the Scottish Highlands, something that happened centuries ago, and it just, there's a supernatural element to it. So the story kind of goes, it progresses through currents, what would be like real life, so to speak, and then it ties into the supernatural element along with the history and everything else. So, like, the next book, you know, it takes them a little bit further. It's a lot more action in the next book. This one's more of world building, where I'm kind of building this world, letting everybody know what it's about. And then the books are going to progress into something where you'll be able to follow it, saying, oh, where are they going to go now? You know, which is what I want.
That's awesome. I think that's something like world building is extremely crucial here, introducing readers that might not be familiar with the word. It's a great starting spot. So, I'll talk a little bit about the supernatural elements.
Yes.
Why include it?
It just seems like it's one of those books that get people interested. You know, I personally don't like true life, real life stuff that's going on now. I like that supernatural element to it. But you can still tell a good story from a fiction standpoint. So, like on this particular one, it just, you know, I was thinking about vampires at one point, but they're so overdone. Everybody's doing them. Not to say that at one point there won't be a vampire element to this, specifically werewolves versus vampires. And I've had several big influences, including Underworld, which is one of my favorites.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, get your blue tickets out. Get your blue tickets ready.
So in this part, you know, instead of saturating with vampires, I decided, you know, all the werewolf story, now I'm talking all the classics.
3-4-0, last 3 digits.
One of my favorites. But it is an all-out, it's a horror flick. You know, you're dealing with werewolves. I wanted to bring that human element, heart element to it, on top of a really good story. And I didn't want to make them evil, so to speak. So to me, that was important to kind of tie that into and make it a little bit more interesting. Nobody's done it before.
So you talk about, because I know like super, you talk about supernatural can go one of two ways. You can go either the supernatural fantasy, where it's more lighthearted and kind of you bring the whole family together. Then you have the supernatural horror elements, where it's like more darker and like more like young adults, adults. So what kind of supernatural elements are we expecting in this film?
I would say it's a little more darker. With the werewolf element, my werewolves are a little bit different. They have several different forms. It's not just werewolf and human. They have, you know, the dog form, which you would see them, but you can literally tell when you're looking at them, they're not regular wolves. Or they're on what they call their battle pose, which is kind of like Underworld, where they're on two legs, like a typical werewolf. I wanted that element. There's also a ghost element to this. My protagonist has visions, and it kind of goes in with the lore, but they have seers, the werewolf pack. Seers could be witches, they could be gypsies, they could be anything, but they're not supposed to mix. Her parents mixed and they weren't supposed to. So she's a little bit different than a normal woman. So it kind of pulls in those elements, but I kept it grounded. But I did keep it grounded, so it's not, okay, that's
Jake, so it's Jake, not we need you in the admissions booth. Jake, we need you in the admissions.
Apologizing to listeners and viewers, because I am trying my best to get around all these various raffles and announcements. But I love that you're talking about so your main character is kind of like a half-breed character.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, my werewolves are born into werewolves. You can be born, and it hasn't been uncovered yet what makes them, what makes some can turn, some can't. If you're born into werewolves, chances are good you'll be, you can be turned a little bit easier, but you're not born one. You have to kind of be turned. She's turned a little bit different, but not everybody can take it. Some people are bitten, and they can't take a bite, they die because of the viruses that are carried. So it's a little bit different. It's a different view of it. Some of it I'm still going through. So, you know, it'll come out. It'll come out. Serious.
So I'm not trying to spoil anything for new listeners. Like I'm like am I like crouching on spoiler territory here? Like I don't want to. But you know, so this is the first book. And
yes.
I mean, it is. Just recently come out. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Doing books and doing creative things, especially with a full-time job, family, life. It's one of the most stressful things in the world.
It's actually a release for me because it escapes. If things are going crazy, and I've had some tribulations over the last couple years, it's my escape, and I escape into my world. One of my biggest influences actually is Tolkien. I'm a full-fledged Tolkien fan. Lord of the Rings! That sort of thing, but he's influenced me in more ways than one, and obviously I'm not writing about a fantasy, I have other things, but it's his method of writing and how he sees world building, and that was a huge influence on me. So it is my outlet when I write to these. No matter what's going on, I can always turn to another, my world, whichever one I'm writing on. I'm writing on several projects, but this particular one came out, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, full disclosure, I meant to say, like, you know, writing on top of everything else sometimes can be stressful, but doing creative outlets like this one and yours definitely is a great way to relieve from that stress, relieve from that tension, escape. Which, with your conventions, we are the mayor of the Pop Culture Institute Convention, and we embrace that in every aspect we can. One thing that we definitely feel like should be talked about more is this stigma around mental health. And for our personal opinion, what are practical ways that we can overcome the stigma and open up having these conversations?
I think the resources that those communities have are really important and shouldn't be overlooked. I have several family members that have that. I mean, had they not been identified, so to speak, with some of these resources, I don't know if they would get the help that they need. And it's such a wide range of issues that encompasses, that broad range. And I think it's really important to be more self-aware of it. That if, you know, you have somebody that you, you know, really care about, them, just, you know, something's, you know, get them the help that they need, whatever that may be.
Great. All right. So, people watching this or listening to this right now, where can they find your book and where can they follow your exploits? It'll be cool.
It is available on champagnebooks.com. Also, Amazon has it as well as Barnes & Noble, so you can get it in digital as well as hard copy. You can also connect with me on Facebook, M.L. Mastrin, and that's the same as my Twitter handle, at M.L. Mastrin, and you can reach out to me there where I'll be, and, you know, feel free to reach out. I try to message back people when I can, so.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
All right, so I am now here with Mr. Ron Good, and he is one of the masterminds, if not the mastermind, behind God Awful Comics. I know you can't see that. We go down that way. What's up, man?
You having a good time here, Paranoia? Come back here and check out the Gigahertz. This thing was in Mad Max. That's pretty stinking cool. That car's like a Doomsday Prepper's dream, guys. Come check it out.
Edit that out.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, having a great time here at Paranoia Con, trying to sell some comic books and promote the art and encourage others to start their own comic.
Yeah. So you have like a whole, like, you're one of the more unique vendors here when you're talking about like smaller comics, because normally when I go to conventions, it's normally like full-length comics. You kind of have like this.
Yes.
These throwback comics.
These are like almost freebies. I'm calling them, you know, cheaply, but I have this now. This is the Bare Bones edition, which is a sketchbook artist edition. You know, it's a
contains like kind of the pencil versions. I work digitally a lot, so this is like the top layer hidden, you know, just to show the process. It's called the Bare Bones Edition. A little bit bigger, nicer stock for the cover. A little bit more effort into that one. I put a good effort into all my comics. I just do this for fun. You know, it's my hobby, and I like to encourage other people. If you're interested in drawing, please make your own comic. Throw it into it. You won't make a lot of money, but you will have a lot of fun.
I mean, yeah, and at the same day, like you said, like it is fun.
Yeah,
massive.
It's an affordable hobby, you know. If you have access to a good copy or office shop that makes copies, you can do this, and you should do it.
So, kind of talk about a little bit how you got started into doing these, you have horror comics here, but at the same time, you also have these sci-fi, and like you're talking about, like compilation, like Lovehead. Just selling original art as well.
Yeah.
How did you kind of get
started? I really like sci-fi more than I like horror, but I came up with, I'll tell you how I came up with the name God Awful Comics. Somebody, a previous project that I did referred to my comics as being God Awful, being God Awful. I said, God Awful Comics, that's a horror comic. I'm going to use that.
Awesome.
So that's how I got into making a horror. I love horror too. I love the old DC, Tales from the Crypt. Those sort of comics, and a big fan of that.
Love it. And that's kind of what me and Jason and so on back in May for Free Comic Book Day. He had talked about it, and I was like off guard by like someone making your company God Awful. I was like seeing you here and talk about this.
Take a dig at you and turn it around and make it positive, or, you know. And if my comics are bad, then it still applies, so it's accurate, you know. Either way, I will, you know, I will.
All right, guys, get your tickets ready.
These stories are like one and done, unless kind of like you're talking about, like these comics are very much in the vein of like the old horror, like cult comics that were like compilations
from
the '50s. Yeah, that would tell stories from all over the world.
That's another attempt at reviving the '50s horror comic.
We need it.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, it's gloomy and gloomy, but it's fun to it. I mean, in my third issue, I wiped out Pennsylvania with a nuclear meltdown. So I mean. But it's cool. We're all okay here in Pennsylvania, you know.
So what's it like for you as a writer?
I'm not a writer. I'm an artist.
That's right. I do
write and draw the comics. I do everything by myself. Occasionally, I got Jason So, who did it for me a couple of issues. What I do is I... See, here's like the full size page. You know, I would draw this and then fill in the words later. So I mean, that's kind of like script.
You're interested in the
so what's it like, kind of like as you're going from story to story?
Yeah, I mean, I just try to do something different each time. You know, I like the variety. I get bored with doing the same thing, you know, over and over again. So I, would do a werewolf one issue, and do a nuclear story, and do a ghost story, and you know, try to change it up. And they're short stories, you know, because I do these cheap mini comics, and you can tell a story in, you know, 3 to 6 pages. Yeah, it's pretty possible.
All right. So you also kind of do sci-fi, a lot of your content that you have here today.
There is sci-fi elements in the story. Like the werewolf story starts out as an astronaut story, and at the end, sorry if I ruined the ending, but at the end it's revealed they're actually a werewolf, you know.
So, like, what's it like jumping from something like that? Like, I know that, like, there's, like, similarities between the genres. So, what is, like, the differences for you as a creator jumping from something that is
Well, it's got awful comics, so they're all horrific. You know, it's all got that doomy, gloomy thing. But yeah, I mean, moving from genre to genre, it's the most important thing is the story. You know, I'm a storyteller. I'm not. That's what I say, what you're saying about the writing. I'm not a writer. I'm more of an artist, but I am a storyteller. And that's the important thing when you're making your own comic. No matter what the job is, the most important thing is the story. So, you know, what I'm drawing on is the most important thing is telling this, the story through your illustrations.
Yeah, so you had talked about previously, like, someone had taken, like, a comic and, you know, that's how the name got into it. You know what I said? Now you have a...
Yeah, and it turned the comic itself to sideways format, yeah. Too. So. I'm breaking all kinds of rules here.
I want to ask this. So what we've been asking today at Paranoia Con convention is to believe in starting conversation about ending stigma, about ending, starting these conversations about mental health. A lot of people think that you have to, like, have this, like, dream, but, like, what are practical ways to start conversations about mental health?
Well, I mean, doing the comic books is what keeps me sane. I don't know what I would do if I didn't have my art or my, you know, my comic books. That's something to look forward to doing the next one. I don't come out with a monthly or anything, but it takes me a while because I'm busy with a job. It's just good to have activities and hobbies, to enrich your life. It's like, I certainly am not getting financially rich off this, but I enjoy doing it.
Your outlets are super important.
Yes.
All right, so people listening to this right now, we cover a lot of horror on here, so this is like an audience flavor comic built in right here. So where can people find you out? Find you online?
I have a Facebook page. Just search for God Awful Comics.
All right. Well, you guys go check out God Awful Comics. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for talking to me.
Yeah, man. And we'll see you guys in just a few minutes. Next door to God Awful Comics, I found Austin H. And he's here promoting his book, Recovery. What is going on, man?
Not too much. Just excited to be here today. I've got two books this year. Last year when I was here, I hadn't had anything printed, so it's exciting to have some merch and get my idea, my story out there.
So, tell us a little bit about what this book Recovery is.
Okay, well, it's like many other stories. It's a compilation of just a bunch of different ideas, just reorganized in a different way. So, it's based off a lot of things I read, played, watched growing up. So, it's about anthropomorphic animal movies in, like, kind of an Old West setting, but it's actually close to popular. So, kind of that future feel with a retro kind of feel that they
So you actually started out doing webcomic.
Yes.
Which is what this originally is, and
you have probably one of the most unique creative starts that I've ever heard in this podcast.
So tell me a little bit about it off air, but kind of talk about where this kind of started off with.
Okay. Well, I was trying to do as much as possible all traditional art. So just doing the penciling using pencil and paper for the letters, for, of course, all the images and all that, and scanning into the computer and using as little digital editing as possible. You know, eventually I found out there's a reason people use the shortcuts, but just try to stay true to that just raw, real feel. Because I think it complements the style of the writing nicely.
You also, you're serving every job on this book. Art, writing, and lettering. You talked about, like, lettering and doing it by hand with pencil in the early days.
yeah, that's how I was doing it, and it was difficult. It was smudging my work to go back over and tell her the letter, to do the letters over again. So, it was a neat idea, but ultimately the execution, I needed to move on to more money.
So, what's it like, kind of like transitioning from doing a web comic to something more modern, like publishing and basically like a physical comic?
Well, it was Ron of God Awful Comics, as we talked to earlier, that encouraged me to just go print them, take it to a print shop, print them out, cut them, staple them, copy them, and it really that idea really grabbed me because I was looking for a real economical way to get them to print, and that just seemed like work for me. And again, it kind of seemed like it fit the style, the greatness, the rawness of the comic. To have it just be on printer paper, folded, and cut and stapled by myself. Just kind of naturally segued into that. I wanted people to be able to hold a copy of it in their hand, because I like to be able to do that with comics.
Yeah, I mean, I usually comics are great, but like, when you get the ones especially something that is something like not all the books, but apparently I had cons, it's a different deal because there's more hours that were poured into that, and it's not just because it's their job, it's because it's their passion.
Yeah, and I think I like just the tactile experience of holding it. I enjoy digital comics. I, of course, read some web comics as well as writing them. But just being able to have that copy in your hand, I think that's a special part of it.
So, what like, obviously, you compared to the genres of, like, sci-fi and western. Where does it kind of, like, a love like that exist? Generally speaking,
the only thing that I can
think of
that
we
set in that way would be Firefly.
But
so why go after something
very distinct genre? Alright, guys, we got about 10 minutes to come see
Handsome
Pants. Alright. Yeah, so I think the reason I settled on those genres of kind of like the sci-fi and the western together is just because those are two genres that have been favorites of mine. And really, although perhaps Firefly mixes them the most, like, obviously, where, like, the way the characters talk, the way they dress, the way they Western, really, there's a lot of Western elements to, say, like, Star Wars. And Star Wars was, like, one of the first fandoms that I really became a part of as a kid. I think seeing those natural connections of, like, you know, the gritty heroes that kind of permeate both genres, and the enjoyment of the sci-fi aesthetic as well as the tropes of the western. So getting to see the showdowns, getting to see the desert landscapes and all that kind of stuff, but within that, putting in characters that are, you know, human-animal hybrids. You know, just to me, it was a really natural fit because those are the kinds of things that I've always loved.
Fair enough. So, obviously, the two issues didn't count, and I know in indie comics, it's more common for the issues to be as prevalent. Is this something that you foresee the story retelling, kind of taking these characters from the time coming, or is it something that you've just kind of seen into right now in your mind?
Well, this is a 5-part series that I'm doing right now, and I certainly have a lot more story that I could tell in this world after that, but I've committed to doing those first 5 parts, and once I've done that, I'm going to kind of step back and say, okay, do I want to keep doing recovery stories, or do I want to move on to a different genre, a different group of characters, do something new again?
Alright, so one thing that we've been asking people with this, specifically, this convention, brain parts, not fun. And when you do live coverage like this, what do you guys think? You're talking about mental health. We're a podcast that deals with that. So I think a lot of people have this concept or this notion that you have to have, like, fancy degrees or, like, fancy knowledge in order to have these conversations. What are practical ways you think we can break the stigma around these topics?
Well, actually, I didn't know you were going to ask me about this, but in my afterword, in the first issue, I have a Bible verse here. It's Isaiah 40:31-31. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. The reason I put that in there is actually because I did have some struggles, particularly in my college years. Got pretty dark at different times. And that verse to me was one of the big things the way that it says, particularly, that young men stumble and fall and grow weary, but they still can be able to soar like eagles. That is, I don't know if that breaks the stigma, but I think it breaks, for me, the stigma I would hold against myself. That I just am able to say, you know what, it seems dark now, it seems bad now, but things will be okay. And so, of course, my spirituality has been a big part of my journey there. But yeah, I think that a big part of breaking the stigma is just saying, being able to stand up and say, look, I've struggled, but I'm okay now, or I will be okay. So, yeah, I mean, that's a great angle you guys are taking, and I'm glad that someone's out there trying to encourage people that better.
Yeah, man. Testimony that they are powerful. You know, so my wife and I sent us some love. This is entirely a Christian podcast. For us, it's a ministry. It's a platform for ministry. It's trying to get these conversations. And I know that, like, there's going to be different people that you have different conversations and people believe in different things. But, man, thank you so much for putting that in the back of your book and being vulnerable with
you,
man. Where can people find you online?
Either search for Recovery the Webcomic on Facebook or recovery.webcomic.ws. Yes, that's right.
Getting the official right now.
Yes, recovery.webcomic.ws. So that's the correct. I'm also live, so that's all on the same thing.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely.
We're here, and we are here with the headliners. It makes only sense to kind of do it. Jason So, who has been on our show before, and Mark Scroll. So close. Scroll. Next year. Next March. But...
That was like ninja reflexes. Hopefully we're live.
Oh, it... Okay. And these guys just put out a book called Necroman Number 1. You guys will be seeing a review for it on YouTube in just a little bit. But, Mark, you're the creator of this book, man. So tell us a little bit about where this book comes from for you.
Well, I've always wanted to write comics ever since I was a little kid. And, I used to, when I was in school, I used to spend recess, you know, sitting there drawing and writing comics, and I only really took it seriously probably around 2011, 2012, when we did the original Necroman Number 1. I came up with the character when I was at work one day, and I was trying to come up with something new that I haven't seen before, and... I just tried to marry my love of superheroes and horror movies and comics. So I took a superhero and I killed him and made him resurrect as a zombie who has to relearn how to be a superhero. And throughout the series, we're going to see him struggle with different things, you know, trying to learn his new powers and... the rejection that he receives because of the way he looks and what he is. So it's really kind of a tale of, you know, hopefully an uplifting tale, even though it's dark and gritty and, you know, blood and guts. We're hoping that it's an uplifting, positive story that, you know, no matter what life throws at you, even if you're a zombie, you can still do the right thing and be a superhero.
So, I don't think you talked about this when we did Free Comic Book.
No, remember, I was so, like, sketched out about, like, giving away anything. I'm like, wait. And then I joked about it. I was like, if you want to ruin a book, just have me interview for it because I'll give it all away. But, no, we didn't really have a chance to touch on the book itself. But that is it. So, we are ready to talk all about it.
So, as a, like, all right, so zombies, they create brains.
Yes.
Yes.
And so, like, is that, like, an element that you guys explore within this book without giving it away?
Yes.
Yes, we do. And we have some really fun gags that we're going to pull within the series that will make it fun for the reader to see what we do next with that.
Issue 2, page 5. Starts the brain gag, and it is freaking awesome. You're gonna love it. You're like, oh my god, Jason, no, that's how we're gonna do this. And I'm like, yeah, that's. I think I was talking to Mark about it, and we're gonna get into where I can't give it away. And I'm gonna be like, but we got into a thing on how we had to control that urge and what we were gonna do to make it so he wasn't just some monster running around like in people's faces.
We'll give you a little bit of a hint that he wears a utility belt for a reason.
Fair enough. So is that kind of like something that you guys explore within the book, is kind of like his duality of like wanting to like be a hero and also kind of dealing with this new curse of, you know, being a cannibal at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes. Yeah. We might even at some point tackle the idea that, you know, maybe because he doesn't want to hurt people, maybe it's not human brains that he uses to curb his hunger.
So what's it like for you as a writer to kind of take something like that? Because that, I think, is where zombies and, like, the horror genre kind of get interesting, is when you do bring in, like, a psychological aspect to it. It's not just, oh, I kill because I want to kill. It's I kill because of this desire, this impulse, or this is a fetish for me and stuff like that.
Right, yeah, exactly. It's definitely going to be a struggle for him that, you know, he'll bounce back and forth between feeling the need to eat these people's brains, but yet the desire to want to help them at the same time. And he'll, you know, like I said before, he'll definitely have a struggle of when people see them or see him come to rescue them. You know, they'll be frightened. They might not want to, you know, take that his help.
So how did you kind of get involved in the book? Because you were the original artist on the original book, correct?
No, actually, we've worked with a couple different artists throughout the years. Back in 2012 was when the original number one was released. I wrote the script, and I came up with the character and plot with a friend of mine who also owns Paranoia Comics, Brogan Wayne. And we wrote a short 12-page issue for issue one with another artist named Trevor Shue. And then from there, we did a number two with another artist named Jim Caldwell. And which was all fine and good. And we were trucking along, and for various reasons, our last artist we parted ways with. And it just so happened that it was around the time of Paranoia Con last year, 2017. And this guy, Jason, came up to me and said, hey, I like the way your character looks. He's really unique. Do you mind if I draw him for you? And I said, yeah, meaning just a poster, mm-hmm. a print he wanted to do.
Which
I
we
said,
gave yeah, away last year.
Right, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So somebody won that in a raffle.
Yeah, so, yeah, I said absolutely. I don't see why not. I love seeing different artists' interpretation of it. I think one of the more fun things we have going with the Facebook and Necronation page on Facebook is all the different fans that send in fan art all the time.
So we had a sick piece today. Yeah. I mean, a fan drew a Necroman. It's absolutely sick.
Yeah, but we love seeing different interpretations of them. They, you know, a lot of artists have a lot of fun with what body parts are falling off,
what's broken here. Yeah, like
sometimes,
what's missing.
Sometimes they make them real emaciated and thin and stuff. Jason here makes them real buff, like he was before he died as the superhero. But anyways, so Jason drew that for us, and we really kind of hit it off as friends. And just through talking, he said to me, you know, you have a really good idea here, a solid character, but I think your first attempt with the other artist could be improved. Your writing seems to have made leaps and bounds ahead, you know, as I was doing other books, like our Death Rite book and everything. And he said, what do you think about rebooting it? And I was a little skeptical at first because we only had two issues. We're very unknown. We're, you know, small press, independent. And I said, I don't know if we want to go down that route and reboot it without really having much of a fan base. I mean, we have a little bit of one, but, you know, a reboot usually is reserved for, like, Marvel and DC. So as I was thinking about it, the ideas started turning on how we could improve the story and flesh out the characters, make it a full-length 21-page comic, and really boost the quality of the art and the book itself. And I called him up one day and said, yeah, absolutely, let's go ahead with this, and we're going to reboot this and do it right, and we're going to knock people's socks off with it. So
it's full throttle after that.
Yeah.
So 1 year ago today, if you will, the anniversary of Paranoia Con 2017, is when Mark and I sort of met and, like, got the idea, and then it just went from there. It just exploded.
So what varies as far as, like, storytelling for the new series versus the old series?
There's a lot of things. There's a lot of elements from the first one that I cut out that were made the plot kind of convoluted, and basically, we simplified it in a lot of ways, which might sound not good, but if you're trying to tell a cohesive, coherent story, you know, a lot of times you want to cut the fat and get right to the point. So there's a lot of elements that we changed up in that sense, and we really fleshed out the characters, and we want to make sure that everybody has an emotional attachment to each and every one of them, whether they love or hate the character. And, you know, in some cases, we want you to hate the villains, obviously. So, but yeah, it's and just without sounding like I'm tooting, without sounding like I'm bragging or anything, but I do feel like my writing has improved since I started. Because Necroman and Death Rite were really the first things I've ever written, ever. So, you know, it's over the years I've improved, I'd like to think. You know, I try and make every book that I do better than the last one. So
I think from a story point standpoint, like, I've picked up small press comics or, like, indie comics that have just been really large. Like, I see what they're trying to do, and I always think that when you're doing, like, independent stories, the simpler is the better, because you're kind of, like, wetting a whistle for what's to come.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I would agree with that, absolutely. Yeah, you don't want to bog it down too much, too early. I mean, you want to
trim the fat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get them what they need to know, and that's it. I mean, get them the story. That's what you want to do.
You even look at, Batman as a character that's coming out, and everybody knows Batman, everyone knows his origin story. But when the character first, you know, debuted, like, here you have a character that debuts in a comic series back in, you know, Detective Comics number 27, but doesn't actually get an origin story until, like, Batman number 4, about a full year later. So he's, I think, like, that's honestly the smartest way to kind of do it, because, like, there's, like, that mystery that's still there, and, you know, you're marrying genres that people love. If you mm-hmm. want a superhero, it's got you.
We got
zombies,
you. Yeah. We got you.
You love horror, you got
it. We got
it. We try and jam-pack or well, at least we're going to. We definitely hit it with number one, but we're gonna the whole series. We're gonna try and jam pack every issue with all that. Plenty of action, plenty of real horror. And honestly, when you talked about the old Batmans, it made me think. You know, the writing in it, even though the art and the tone of the book is very dark. A lot of the writing and dialogue I try and pull from my inspiration of like old Silver Age books. So it kind of I feel like it reads more like an old Superman book or something like that as far as dialogue goes, which I did on purpose to try and kind of yin and yang it a little bit and give you that feel. You know, within all of the dark horror, it's that one brightness that gives you that superhero feel within it. So,
from an artist standpoint, like, what did you want to bring to this table for old readers and new readers alike to visually see?
I wanted to make it sick. And I really just wanted to blow everybody's socks off. And I don't mean sick as in like a twisted, like weird way. I just mean I wanted to capture them, you know, with the art. I wanted them to be like, damn, like, that's some kick-ass art right there. Like, I'd like to see more of that. So my intentions with the art were just to grab them from across the room and do the best work that I could do. You know, like, I really pushed myself on the book every day. You know, I'm working on sequentials for Necroman, so I'm growing with the book. So as an artist, I'm just trying to kick ass and kick things, right? Chuck Norris.
you guys can't like visually feel this aura that's going on right now.
It's good aura.
It's like sitting down with like Scott Snyder and like Greg Capullo. It's like the two of them just have this like dynamic chemistry and visual storytelling is amazing. The Ashcan that came out in the spring.
I think it's great.
Oh, blew my socks off. I got through it and I was like, damn.
So that would be a continuation of the book is a continuation of it, but the Ashcan was, for the people who don't know out there, was a limited edition pages 1-6 or something like that. And it was just to wet your whistle for the book, and people have gone crazy for it. I think we maybe have 6 or 7 or 8 of them left, and the rest of them are gone. And now, like, the back market, it's more of a premium for it than the $3 cover price.
And I think, too, like, it's one of those things that, like, it builds up your...
you want to see what issue one is all about. Like, I wanted to just...
We cut it off at a perfect point where it's right before something big happens. And, you know, I know...
The fight scene.
For me, personally, as a fan, I would be hungry to see what...
You'd be pissed at us. Man, are you serious, dude? This is how you're going to do me? Yeah, that's exactly how we're going to do you guys. Yeah.
I mean, because we had Jason on for Free Comic Book Day. Genre 4 is really notorious for having, these series that are revolving around villains. And you're talking Jason, Freddy, Pinhead, Chucky, like, they are just notorious villains. So when you have a horror-centric hero, kind of, like, talk about the process for creating a villain for Necro.
It's pretty simple. We just wanted to make a real asshole. Like, the worst dude ever. Like, all the stuff you could think of some dude doing, he does it, and he's a jerk.
Well, one thing
he
with it...
it better than I am. But as an artist, I'm like, man, let's make him a real a-hole. Like, let's make him do this, this, and this. And Mark sort of has to throttle me a little bit. So I'm like,
well, what I think is important is that for a character like Necroman, to find a villain for him, you just basically have to come up with someone who leans into his weaknesses. So, you know, what would one of his weaknesses be? Basically, like I said before, you know, the fact that he's rejected by a lot of people, and in his mind, he feels more like Superman than someone like a Batman that, you know, stays within the shadows. He wants to go out there and be your friend and help. So... basically, his villains are just going to exploit that fact that, you know, people just don't accept him for who he is.
Yeah. Like, I want to see his villain be because like the Ash Cannon hasn't had it yet, and I just picked up the Necromans. They have not read it yet. I don't want any spoilers, man. Okay, there it goes. I thought you were gonna be like, this is the villain!
Oh no,
you guys gotta pick it up.
How about how sick does maybe the variant for cover B look?
It's amazing.
Issue number two.
So you guys have these great things coming for the series. Mm-hmm. Again, you talked about rebooting at such a young age,
yeah.
Now that it's rebooted, like, what is the story that you want to tell with this character? Like, fully?
I just want him to be an inspiration. Really. I've always gravitated towards characters that, speak to me on a certain level where, someone like, for instance, like Daredevil, he's flawed because he's blind, but he doesn't, his desire to never give up. I would love for Necroman to become one of those characters that, some kid might read it who is into superheroes and horror and finds what he loves in both, but, he gravitates towards the character because he sees that he just never gives up, no matter what life throws at him, relearning how to be a superhero, he's probably going to fail quite a few times. So, the fact that he just keeps on going is really what I hope people take away from it.
So we do a segment on our show called Rose to Hope, and this is like the point where we look at the source material and we engage with our guests of the week or the episode and talk about, where to find mental health, where to find hope.
Mm-hmm.
What you were saying just right now, Mark, was just really inspiring to me sitting here. I'm totally wearing Necro Nation.
Look at that, guys. Look at that. That's what's up. That is what's up. Was that movie comic book day?
Yeah.
Yes.
I've worn this a couple times on our YouTube channel.
Awesome.
I believe in supporting small press, and I love Necroman.
Awesome.
So
let's get back to what you were saying. We're going to do something with the source material before I got sidetracked.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Sure.
Scat. So it's Rose to Hope. So you talked about how like he's gonna, with this newfound kind of like transformation, discovering and learning how to find himself. He's gonna fail, but he's gonna continuously just push. And I think that's a message that a lot of us need to hear,
mm-hmm.
Especially us going through like depression or addiction or suicide. It's like pushing no matter what the circumstances are, because that through that push, through that pain, there's always something that's more glorious than that pain, more beautiful than that pain.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if Necroman can look at this crappy parts in life and still go forward with it, so can you. His life sucks. He's a zombie. He died and he came back, but he will always push forward,
And I think that there's a lot of us that kind of have these, like, bad situations, whether it's a bad home life or it's a bad work situation or going through a divorce or high school or, insert it's blank here. You look at something like Necroman's bloodlust. I mean, that's pretty bad.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
It's really bad. It's a good time, so nobody has to deal with that in the real world.
Yeah. So if you're listening, know that tomorrow is always worth it.
Yeah, it could be worse. You could be a brain dead zombie that wants to eat brains, but you're not.
Right.
You're a fan listening to a podcast.
You're a living and loving person. We love you guys, and we want you guys to click the links in the descriptions below. And speaking of links, where can people find you guys online, and where can people pick up a copy of Necroman Number
One? The Facebook page, Necroman. Like us on there. We like our likers. How's that sound? Facebook. You can check out the art of Jason Show. I think there's a Paranoid Comics.
Yes, on Facebook there's Paranoid Comics, which has a lot of updates as well. That also covers our other books, like Death Rite, which is more of a slasher kind of Halloween, Freddy, Jason kind of story. Maybe not quite as uplifting, but and we this coming Christmas we're hoping to come out with a new book called It Came From the Lab, which is like a giant bug monster B-movie kind of thing with a really silly superhero. It's kind of my first attempt at a more of a comedy kind of book.
More for little kids.
Yeah, it's a little more for little kids.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of violence, but it's, you know, it's geared more towards kids. The art's very cartoony and everything. So, but yeah, we're also on Instagram. You can follow Paranoid Comics is on Instagram. We have a Twitter, but I don't really use it much, so I wouldn't bother.
I have a Twitter, and I don't know how to use it, so I don't.
But that's more accurate. Yeah, I don't know how to use it either.
So. Why do I do this? This is pissing me off. I'm done. Damn you, Twitter.
So, yeah.
Culture, artist owned, fan supported.